You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, this is Adam Torres, and I'm here to tell you that it has never been easier to start your very own podcast. At Mission Matters, our goal is to amplify stories that matter. That means we want to help you start your podcast because your story matters. We can do this in three different ways. One, join our podcast school and take a free or paid course. Two, visit our resources page where we've already figured out what you need, such as where to host your podcast. Or three, heck, we can even do everything for you through our podcast agency, including editing for cheaper than you can do in-house. Oh, and no contracts, services month to month. Get started by heading over to missionmatters.com and click on Start a Podcast. All right, now let's get into the show. Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of the Mission Matters Business Podcast, your source for all things business. My name is Adam Torres. You can follow me on Instagram at AskAdamTorres to keep up with my book releases, book tour schedule, signings, all that other good stuff. Always love to connect with you there. And as always, if you'd like to apply to become a co-author of one of my upcoming books, just head on over to the website, missionmatters.com, and click on Become an Author to Apply. All right, today I have Holly Wilson on the line, and she's founder and CEO over at Women's Recovery. Holly, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Adam. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
All right, so I'm excited to get into today's topic. So we're going to go further into women's recovery and what you're doing to help your clients and patients. But before we get into that, I'd like to go a little bit further in your background. So how did you get started on this path?
I was a woman, a pretty successful woman in my career who happened to start facing my own personal struggles with alcohol. And so I think when I hit a point where I was ready to accept some help and make some lifestyle choices, I sought treatment myself, and I had an excellent experience. I went to a great treatment center, and, you know, my life changed so much for the better that I knew that I wanted to be able to do this for other people and give back what had been given to me. So pretty much as soon as I was able to, I started working in the field of substance abuse treatment. And I started from the ground up, and I worked my way up to managing a really awesome program in Utah that was residential care, outpatient care, as well as sober living. And at that time, you know, there were a lot of things that I experienced as a client where I was like, man, you know, if I had my place, I would do it that way. And, you know, started to grow the dream of having my own place that was just for women, that focused specifically on women's needs when dealing with addiction. And so, you know, several years later, I ended up getting my master's in clinical mental health counseling a little bit later in life. And I worked some other jobs in the field. And, you know, then I just bit the bullet and went ahead and opened up my own program. And that was back in 2017.
Wow, what an amazing story. And thank you for sharing that. And one of my favorite stories of entrepreneurs or entrepreneurship in general is when somebody sees a need in the market because of some of their own experiences, right? And then they think about it and they're like, man, I could probably do this a little better. This could be a real benefit, or this is something that I want to dedicate my life to, which is obviously the experience you had. So that being said, you know, there's some people out there listening right now that are in that maybe idea stage as entrepreneurs, or they're kind of just getting started, or they're like, they're maybe where you were at, you know, when you're just getting on your learning path, so to speak, not quite ready to launch the business. What kind of advice would you give to that newbie? And it doesn't have to be, by the way, in your same niche or space. It could be in any space, just in general. What kind of advice would you give them on that path or that route?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had the fortune of working very closely with some brilliant CEOs before I opened my company. And I always saw there was one constant theme that they all had, and that I felt like I had the same kind of a drive. And it's that it doesn't necessarily mean that anybody who's an entrepreneur who goes and starts a successful business knows anything that anybody else doesn't already know. It's just that they set a goal and they're willing to continue to push forward toward that goal. And when they come up against an obstacle, they research, they figure it out, they ask questions, they're open to different suggestions, and it's that they just keep pushing forward no matter what. Whereas I do think a lot of times for many of us, coming to an obstacle, it's easier to just be like, you know what, this is overwhelming, and we take the easier path. And so I would say anybody who is willing to have that kind of tenacity to continue to work hard and overcome the challenges that will inevitably come, that anybody can be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great advice. I love it. And you're right. Some people, when we talk about some of the things we're doing over here, they think we have things always figured out. I'm like, we don't have things figured out. We just try, we just execute, and we do what we know how to do, and we get better, and we just keep reiterating.
Out.
And like, and that's the only thing. All I can say is we're not stopping. So there you go. But I love your advice, Holly, because I'm taking it and take it every day like my little medicine. So. That being said, I do.
We have a lot of mistakes. We have a lot of failures, but we don't let it get us down. Not for
love it. Love it. So let's change it up a bit. So I do want to go further into women's recovery. So tell us a little bit more about the company and the mission, please.
The Women's Recovery is an intensive outpatient and outpatient program that is gender specific. So we are focused specifically around women's needs. It does require a different licensure in the state of Colorado where we're based. We provide group therapy, individual therapy, extensive psychiatry sessions, case management. We also offer the option of sober living for clients who need that as well. But clients can also seek treatment with us while they remain in their homes if that's clinically appropriate. We also provide the option of yoga and neurofeedback and try to take a really holistic approach to addiction treatment.
Can you maybe just provide a little bit of the education piece on this part? Because I have interviewed quite a few people and on this topic, and I've never heard of the gender specific for women model. So can you talk a little bit, and there may be some women listening right now that didn't know that was an option also. Can you talk a little bit more about the importance and or why you gone that route? Like some of maybe the needs of women in this and why it's done this way.
Yeah, so one of the things I guess I noticed being on the client side of things, and I went to a co-ed living or a co-ed treatment environment, I did notice there was a lot of cross addiction, if you will, with people becoming infatuated with people of the opposite sex. So that is one thing that is completely taken off the table, because in early recovery, you know, after we've been spending years of suppressing our emotions with substances, all of our emotions come back with a vengeance. So we feel everything a lot more typically. You know, our libidos can be through the roof. Particularly, we've noticed that with opiate addicts. And so it's one thing that we can avoid from keeping us distracted from what we really need to address, which are the underlying issues. And, you know, in speaking of underlying issues for a lot of women specifically, unresolved trauma is the number one reason that prevents them from getting sober. And oftentimes for women, that trauma has been perpetrated by a male in their history. And so just by the very nature of having a male involved in their treatment can prevent them from doing the underlying work because they're uncomfortable or subconsciously or consciously with being able to even go there in their psyche to be able to get to that root of the problem. So we find that that's one that really, helps support their treatment process. And then, you know, again, we can focus more specifically on women's issues, even physiologically, and how substances affect our bodies different than men's. Women have the telescoping effect where addiction can actually ravage our bodies a lot quicker because of the physiological composition. Our body will hang on to substances because women tend to have a higher fat composition than men. So it stays in our body and continues to harm us for longer. So women actually tend to die a lot earlier than men from addiction as well.
Oh, wow. So it makes perfect sense. And I want to go. I just wanted that education piece first. Now let's go a little bit further into kind of the mission or the thought process. So what makes your practice different?
Well, one of the things that was important to me was that when I, you know, went into treatment, I had been a pretty successful career woman, treatment as an adult, and I kept finding that in the treatment process, I was treated like a child or infantilized, and there was a lot of shame-inducing talk of, you know, your best thinking got you here, and in my mind, I kept thinking like, well, you know, I really wasn't doing that bad. I mean, I just had a drinking problem that I wasn't happy with, but, you know, it doesn't mean I don't know anything and that I wasn't able to have parts of my life that were well or successful. So, you know, for me, I thought it was really important to take a different approach that kind of departs from some traditional parts of treatment that I think are really came about because of the stigma of addiction and that as well as, what I kept seeing or hearing was people saying things like, well, you haven't hit rock bottom yet, so I guess you're just not ready. And in my mind, that always baffled me because there are so many people who recognize that drinking and drugs are causing problems in their life long before they, you know, lose all their money or have been isolated from their families, lost their jobs, got a DUI. So it's like, I don't know why in addiction we feel like we have to wait for all those things. And it is a huge problem that fuels the epidemic that we're facing because then people do get to this point where they're only getting help once they have lost everything. And then where do they go? They don't have insurance. They don't have money. They don't have the support of their family or friends. And so then they're stuck and they've waited till their disease has really progressed and caused a lot more harm than it needed to. And we don't really view any other healthcare in that way. It's like, to me, the equivalent of going into the doctor and them saying, hey, you know, you have stage 2 cancer, and saying, you know what, I'm going to wait until it's stage 4 and until I'm going to take care of it. And that's how we view addiction as a society. So we are really big advocates of early intervention. And our treatment program takes place. It's about a 10 to 12 hour commitment per week. We have an evening group so people can come after work and have their treatment be completely outside of their work hours so it doesn't interrupt their job. And we have a morning group, and you know, that typically we see a lot of mothers who their kids are at school so they can stay at home with their families. And those are two huge barriers for women seeking treatment, is that they don't want to uproot their life to try to get help. So by trying to tailor our services to women and their schedules and what they have in their lives, we see a lot of people who are able to get help sooner and avoid a lot of huge problems later on and bigger consequences if they had waited.
Wow, that makes so much sense. And with that metaphor you said, when you said it's like, duh, like that was the first thing I said, like, you're not, yes, stage 2, come back later when it's stage 4, like, why does it have to get, like, why do you have to, and not asking you to have a crystal ball or anything like that, obviously, but do you think the industry overall is kind of changing overall to go towards this, or is it kind of like, it's pretty much the same, like, status quo? Because I know medicine or treatment or anything can, I mean, it takes a long time for, like, there's a lot of, like, you know, if something works, why fix it is what a lot of people say, even though it may not necessarily be working. Do you think the industry is kind of taking on to this model at all, or is it, obviously you're pioneering it, but what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I do think there has been a big shift, and I'm glad. And I do think a lot of it has to do with us as a society, you know, because I know even when I was a young kid, there still was a lot of stigma around even going to a therapist, right? And you still will find people who will be like, no, I'm not going to go to a therapist. But overall, as a society, I do think we're starting to accept that more as a normal and healthy approach to life, to seek therapy, which is primarily what we're doing in treatment for people, is we're doing extensive therapy. But I remember when I started, actually, the program a little over 3 years ago, and I started taking that approach at the time, I did have some other industry professionals tell me that that was unethical. And they were like, you know, people really do need to go through inpatient first and then drop down in care in the continuum of care. And I just kind of looked at the ASAM criteria, which is the national standard by which we assess what level of care clients are appropriate for, And I said, you know, there's nothing in here that says that people can't do this first. And that doesn't mean it's for everyone either. I want to be really clear on that, because there are people who have progressed to a level where they do need to go to residential treatment first. And that's okay too. You know, if your body is that progressed, you have to do it. But I do think it, just in this short amount of time, there's been a lot more acceptance around the idea of earlier intervention, as well as the acceptance of underlying issues that are underlying the substance, and that when it's not really the drinks or the drugs that are the problem, they're a symptom of underlying issues that need to be addressed.
No, that's awesome, and a great way of explaining it. And it's funny when you use that example, therapy or a therapist, and I'm like, I feel like in LA, if you don't have a therapist, you're weird. Like, people are like, wait a minute, you don't see a therapist, especially when you're in the dating game. Like, wait a minute, you're not seeing a therapist. I'm not trying to be your therapist, so. It might be a bad joke, but that's where my head went. I'm like, well, if you live in LA, and then it wouldn't have been that way once upon a time. Like, now people have these open conversations, and they're like, oh, you're talking to your therapist, this, that. Before, if you were to tell somebody, a coworker, randomly, oh, I got to go, I've got an appointment with a therapist or something like that, they'd be like, who is this person? Now they're like, thank you. I'm glad you have a therapist. Now I don't have to deal with it. This is awesome.
That's exactly right. And if, like, even 20 years ago, if someone was seeing a therapist, like, oh, what's wrong with them? So I'm very grateful, and I hope that we can continue that same breaking down of the stigma that applies to addiction, because there still are these ideas. And it's what keeps people from getting help, is the stigma that, like, you know, if someone's addicted to a substance, then they're, you know, a gutter junkie or dirty, or, you know, there's even some pushback in the recovery community to stop using the word clean, because that's something people would say, like, I'm 90 days clean. And the insinuation on the other side is that when you're using, you're dirty. And for us, we rather would approach people by saying, you're just a sick person who needs to get well, and that really there should be no difference. Now that we understand the disease model of addiction, it should be treated just like any other illness.
Fantastic. So, Holly, that being said, if somebody is listening to this and they want to learn more and they want to connect with you and your team, I mean, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Yeah, the best way is always through our website, and we also have a ton of resources on there. So even if our program isn't for you, we have a lot of resources, no matter what your background or resources or, you know, personal resources are. But our website is womensrecovery.com. So that's plural, womensrecovery.com. Also, they can call our 800 number. We have our master's level clinician is our director of admissions, and she's very knowledgeable as well. And that number is 888-233-1553.
Perfect. Well, Holly, really appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing more about your journey and all the great work that you're doing over at Women's Recovery. And to the audience, as always, thank you for tuning in. Hope you got a lot of value out of this. If you did, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, leave me a review on the Apple iTunes Store. And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, Mission Matters Business, definitely give us a subscribe there, but also leave us some comments in the video. Love to know what kind of projects and things that you're working on. And Holly, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Adam.